Let's address the elephant not in the room, Byron Donalds. Byron Donalds and I have had multiple conversations. I told him I'm going to be saying this, so when he's seeing this, he knows. You and I talked about this. I invited him multiple times. I said, Byron, I suggest you be here. I agree with the governor. You ought to be on the stage debating. He says, Pat, I got $100 million I've raised. 10 times everybody combined together, I'm at 48% to 58%. If anybody gets to double digits in approval rating as far as candidates goes, I will entertain debating. But till then, I'm not showing up. So that's Byron Donalds.
All right, that was Patrick Bet-David. You might remember that. He was the host of the governor's debate for Florida probably about a month ago. And that was the way he started it. And the other candidates, of course, were Jay Collins, former Speaker of the House, Paul Renner. Jay Collins is the lieutenant governor. Paul Renner, the former Speaker of the House of Florida, and James Fishback, a young businessman. And we did talk about that a lot, but I just wanted to remind you, because tomorrow is the Florida primary. I think all eyes are going to be on Florida, because Florida has become such an influential state to everyone around the country. It's been the gold standard under Ron DeSantis' leadership. And let me just get practical. It is Tuesday, August the 18th, depending on when you're listening to this. This is when the vote will take place. The polls are closed. They close at 7 p.m. They're open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and you can find your precinct and polling location by going to the Office of County Supervisor. Where you are, whatever county you are, the county supervisor of elections. And so I hope that helps. There's been a lot of voting going on already, those of you in Florida. Florida's my home state now. But seriously, I think most of you listening will be interested in what's happening to Florida, won't you? I mean, the wrong choice on the governor's race could mean just a backward slide for Florida. You know, there are so many forces that want to destroy Florida for obvious reasons. It always happens, doesn't it? They want, you know, whether it's President Trump or the most conservative person in a race or the most conservative entity, destruction comes along. At least that you become a target and they try to destroy you. And I think that's true of states too. So tomorrow, August 18th, is the primary. Now, nearly 2 million Floridians have already voted via email, via mail-in and also early voting. So Republicans have cast more total early votes. Democrats have submitted more vote-by-mail ballots. Florida is a closed primary, so you can't vote. You have to vote in the Republican primary if you're registered Republican, in the Democratic primary if you're a registered Democrat. Now, according to this stat that I'm reading, and I'm reading from Tallahassee.com, Floridians turned out with nearly 2 million votes and early ballots. According to state election data, that's about 14.2% of registered voters in Florida have voted already. And Republicans did turn out in greater numbers, but they did early voting while the Democrats sent in more mail-in ballots. So let me give you the numbers, because I think it's interesting. Of the nearly 2 million votes cast so far, 870,850 were for Republicans or from Republicans, and 806,500 were from Democrats. So that's nearly 143,000 more Republican voters showed up at early voting locations. And here's the thing, more than 236,000 citizens, Floridians, voted no party affiliation of another party. So it's going to be very interesting, and I just, you know, I don't need to say to you, do I, that you just have to vote. You just have to, and you have to be informed, and that's what I'm trying to do, inform you about what's going on. Now, at this point, I'm going to take a pause, and I'm going to tell you on the other side of the break at this point where we are after this. Well, I bet you saw that in August, just not long ago, Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey signed a law to remove the state's 24-week gestational limit on abortion. The legislation allows licensed physicians to use their professional medical judgment to perform procedures later in pregnancy without statutory restrictions or exceptions. In other words, you can abort your baby now in Massachusetts up to 9 months, up to birth. And she had a series, she had a bunch of women around her, young women, and they're smiling and cheering. And, you know, I even felt like they were sincerely smiling and cheering, not that they were acting. Young women and older women think this is a great idea. Can you even imagine what that would be? I know you can. And so this is what we're facing in this country. And the reason I support the preborn and the reason they host my show is because they're doing everything they can to stop this madness by showing these women early on in their pregnancy or at whatever stage an ultrasound of their babies. And when they see that baby, they can't bring themselves to terminating its life. It happens to most of them, the majority of them. I think I want to say as many as 60%. I don't have a recent figure on that. But can you imagine what we're stopping here? And that's you. That's you by your generous donation. You know, it's $28 for one ultrasound, and you can stop this. We can't change the law in Massachusetts. Most of us don't live there. It's a tiny little state. But can you imagine this happening? And the only way I think we can really stop it right now is through helping girls just the redemptive way by showing them their babies. It's a brilliant, brilliant thing. I think it's God's way. And if you'd like to help, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. All right, well, today it's just me, and I'm going to be talking to you about the Florida primary, also about the South Carolina runoff, which happens next week. And so both of the states, both of those races are very important. So stay tuned for this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
By the way, this guy's going to be a great governor. Okay.
When President Trump said that last February, most Republican political pundits agree it was like handing Byron Donalds a golden ticket. To be endorsed by Trump and so early made Byron Donalds a star of the Republican Party and virtually unstoppable. Here's the former head of the Palm Beach County Republicans, Sid Dinerstein.
And what I'm telling you is he's such a great story. And unlike these other guys whose names nobody knows, here's
a guy. What do you mean, Jay Collins? We know who Jay Collins is.
Well, you and I do. Go down the street at all my neighbors. Nobody does.
Sid is talking about the rest of the Republican field, including the current Lieutenant Governor, Jay Collins. He has struggled to raise money and party support. James Fishback and former Florida House Speaker Paul Renner are in the same boat, only polling in the single digits.
One guy has all the votes and all the money, and nobody else seems able to get it.
Donalds is a congressman from Naples, formerly a member of Florida's House. He's running on a fiscal conservative MAGA platform, and he talks often of his faith, from being a troubled young man to dedicating his life to Christ. That was thanks to a church group who prayed over him in the parking lot of a Cracker Barrel where he waited tables. If you're wondering how Donalds got on Trump's good side, that goes back to the 2024 presidential primary, when a lot of prominent Florida Republicans were backing Governor DeSantis in his run for president. Donalds went with Trump right out of the gate and says he watched Trump's every move to learn how to win. I'll be at Byron Donalds' camp on election night. I'm Mike Magnoli, CBS 12 News.
All right, so there you go. That's what's happening. And of course, Byron Donalds is way ahead. It's funny to me that actually no one's really reporting that it's a done deal. They may be doing that today because the polls are, you know, we're getting really close. But there have been a lot of fluctuations in this race, which make it very interesting. Let me say a word about Byron Donalds. You know, I think he has been an absolutely delightful spokesperson, strong and powerful. I've been his cheerleader for a long time on television because he makes the case beautifully and eloquently, and he's very winsome, and I really like that. I think, you know, there have been a lot of things passed around about him. I played them when I covered, when I interviewed Jay Collins a couple of weeks ago. And I think there's some merit to those things, but I would just say to all of you, my biggest concern about Byron Donalds, if I could do it, it's not necessarily in order. I am concerned that President Trump nominated him, it's probably 18 months ago now, before anybody had a chance to get into the race. That gives, as the reporter just said, such an advantage, and it makes it very hard for any other person to compete or do anything. And I can tell you that personally, I've tried to get press, top-level press, several major networks, cable channels, and also New Wall Street Journal, tried to get them to cover this race. People I know I contacted to cover this race and be fair and not just not mention the other candidates, like Jay Collins, who's been in second place, and they nobody will do it. I pitched it to people that I know in another arena, and nobody would do it because it's President Trump's pick, and no one wants to cross him. And even if Byron is absolutely fabulous in every way, that's just not right. I don't like that. Do you like that? And so no one's being able to raise money or get media. Byron has very little media. So Byron has kind of sucked up the oxygen. You can't blame him for that. I mean, President Trump did that endorsement. I'm not sure he's the one pushing. I mean, I know he likes Byron, but there are other people in his little circle that are the ones that are in charge of elections, and they're the ones who give him names. But, of course, Byron he knew, and Byron deserves a consideration because of his really good record. Now, here's the problem to me. This would be the most important problem to me. Is that some of you may know this already, but I'll just sort of, you know, play on my experience here. Senators and congressmen, with few exceptions, I think Ron Johnson is an exception. I think Mike Lee is an exception. I think Rand Paul is an exception, and there are others. I just can't rattle them all off in this moment. They have a light load. Their staff does all the research. Their staff, and they're always very young, write their papers, write their statements. Remember when, as congressmen, they're in a committee, the chairman of the committee reads a statement and they all read a statement during a hearing. It's those, I'm sure there are exceptions to this, but I'm telling you, not many. It's their young staffers who write their statements. And some of the staffers can be older, but not many. Not many. And so they go on television, they go to committee meetings, but mostly I think they don't do a lot. I'm just telling you, that's a pretty big condemnation, but going on television and speaking well is not a qualification. I have seen so many people, a ton of them, some you know, some that you don't know, who you think are great. You think they're great. But they don't do anything. They have no accomplishments. They just talk a good game. And I've seen it over and over again. And so I wonder what Byron will actually do. The second thing is, Byron is a congressman. A congressman's duty is to create legislation, try to get it passed. That means you talk your friends and you build something up, you persuade, except for our leader in the Senate, John Thune. He doesn't know how to do. He doesn't do that. But you know, most of the time, you try to talk to people and persuade them to your position on a bill. But Thune can't seem to do that on the Save America Act, as you know. But generally speaking, that's what they do. They've got a bill. They really believe in it, hopefully, and they try to get all these other people to pass. You know, join them in signing it and in voting for it. And that's basically what they do. I mean, some of them oversee other kinds of things, but And some do a really fine job, but mostly it's dead weight in the Congress. So I don't know what Byron does when it comes to executing and actually doing things. I really couldn't say. I think he is held in high regard by people in the Freedom Caucus, so that's a good thing. But here's the thing that they can't explain, and no one can, is that's very different than being an executive running a multi-billion dollar company. And I'm talking about the state of Florida, because when you are a governor, you have to have executive gifts, gifts of execution, gifts of, I don't talk about criminals, executing the law, executing, running all of the departments, keeping it all in mind, keeping a, you know, being a leader so that you see ahead of time what needs to be done. Think of Ron DeSantis. Think of Ron DeSantis. There aren't many governors like that, but he is the standard here. Somebody that can look to the future, who can plan and thinks what's good, not just somebody who's kind of good on the issues and can talk about the issues. It has to be someone that can manage the whole thing. And generally speaking, congressmen and senators are not those people. So I do worry about that. What kind of management experience and on what scale has Byron Donalds had? And so that concerns me, because we, and also I think one of the things I'm working, actually, I shouldn't just say with a group, AFA has a judicial group now that's vetting, and they're partnering with Senator Jim DeMint's organization in Washington, D.C. I was just there with them with a meeting. And one of, as they're vetting candidates for the Supreme Court, which is what they're in the business of doing right now, one of the things that separates how they're approaching this is that they look through the history, the record of the person being considered, not just how they ruled on this and that, they do that too, but is there a time in their life where they showed courage, where they paid a price? And that would mean in all areas of their life. Did they ever stand up for principle ever anywhere? And that's what, when there was a price to be paid. So that's the question. I don't know, maybe Byron has done that. I don't know, but that is a question I'd like to know. So that brings me to James Fishback has really disqualified himself by in the courts, I think, because he voted in Washington, D.C. in the last 7 years, when that's against a Florida constitution if you want to run for governor. So I'll just leave it at that. Paul Renner seems like a very fine person to me. I bet he would make a good governor, but he's only in single digits, and so is James Fishback. Byron, you know, talks about his faith, and I love that. I have no criticism about that. But he is not the only person in the race that's a follower of Christ. Jay Collins is, and so is James Paul Renner. I don't know about James Fishback. So a couple of things. Byron is not the only strong believer in this race. And the other thing I want to caution you, and I believe I've said this before, and I'm not saying this is about Byron, just in general, I have seen sitting members of Congress, this goes way back to when I was at CWA, whose bona fides are that they are Christian. They're known at the First Baptist Church. They're members there. They whatever, you fill in the blank, and they get elected year after year. I could name names. Don't tempt me. They get elected year after year, but I know what they do. I know what they do and what they don't do. Sometimes they're complete frauds, and they wear their faith as some way to get, and they show up at church before elections. So you have to, those of you that are believers, you have to be discerning. Just because a candidate says they're a Christian, you know, it's like James, show me your faith by your works, you know, man. Don't just tell me, let me see your works. So I'm not saying Donalds hasn't, I'm just telling you in general, be careful about that. And in regard to Donald specifically, he's not the only believer in this race. So that brings me to Jay Collins. Jay is lieutenant governor right now. In fact, when he was in the debate that Byron Donalds would not come to it, that's another thing that concerned me. I'll just stop for a second to say that. It isn't that he didn't come. That would be really bad political strategy to debate with guys who were so low in the polls compared to him. He had, I don't know, at the time, 40, 45, maybe 40%. But it was the $100 million part that bothered me. Because, as I understand it, that came from about 7 different donors who are in AI and tech companies. And, you know, I believe in big business. I'm a capitalist. I'm a free market capitalist when it's honest. But I am not for big moneyed AI and tech companies controlling any candidate anywhere. The gambling industry has taken over states by they have money like the tech companies do to buy candidates and to support them and get them get them elected. And I don't like that. I don't like that. That most of that money came from these tech companies and AI companies. I don't like that. And I don't like that Byron made much of it. I mean, why would you do that? That's kind of you might not want to say that. You might want to have maybe somebody else brag on you for that, but not you. Makes me wonder. It just makes me wonder. I don't like that. And then we come to Jay Collins. And I thought it would be a good thing to hear the opening of that debate that Byron Donalds did not want to participate in. This was Jay Collins. And I'm choosing Jay because he's the second in the race now. I have heard has as much as 25, and that was about a month ago. But they're printing that he only has like in the teens. So I don't know what the truth is, because trust me, you can't tell by what you read in the papers or online. But anyway, he's in the second place. And this was his opening statement at that debate. Let's listen.
Well, good evening. And of course, I want to say thank you to Layla and my son, Gabe. Great to see you here. Love you guys. And thank you, Patrick, for hosting us. It's incredibly kind of you to open up your channel like this. It means the world. Guys, this race is about leadership. It's about leadership under pressure. It's about the future of the great free state of Florida. We have been blessed to have Governor Ron DeSantis as our governor for quite some time now. In that time, he has stood boldly with strong, bold, conservative leadership. This simply cannot change. Under his watch, we have become the free state of Florida. We have become the conservative proving grounds of the United States of America. And friends, if you look around the world, there is nowhere else to go. The simple fact is this: when Florida leads, America wins. We have to keep that momentum. He has shown what conservative leadership is truly about. Friends, the next governor has to hold that line. There is no falling back. The left, what do they want to see? They want to see the free state of Florida devolve. They want to see it break down and be soft on crime, soft on DEI, and go back to where we came. That simply cannot happen. You've heard my story. Yes, I was honored to be a Green Beret for many years. It's something I'm incredibly proud of. Brave men who I served beside and I look up to this day. Yes, I got shot. Yes, I lost a leg. And yes, I requalified. But the greatest part of all of that is that I kept getting up, fighting, and serving the great state of Florida, the United States of America, because that is what grit, that is what leadership is, and that is what makes this nation what it is.
Thank
Friends,
you,
I cannot be intimidated. I will not be broken. And under my watch as the next governor of the great state of Florida, the brightest days won't be behind us. They'll be ahead of us, because this state and this nation are worth fighting for every single day.
All right, so Jay Collins, you heard his story. He has a great story. A couple of things I want to say about Jay. He is the lieutenant governor. He was appointed by DeSantis. And so he's been right by the side of DeSantis now for I'm not sure how long. But he knows the drill. You know, lieutenant governors, I guess it depends on the governor, but it seems that Ron DeSantis really has his statewide officers very active, like the AG of Florida now is just tearing it up nationwide about this, about some issues. And so Jay has been by his side, knows the issues, knows what Ron DeSantis is planning. He knows the players. He knows the good people, the bad people. He knows all of that because he's been next to Ron DeSantis all this time. And the other thing is, as I mentioned about courage earlier, and I explained that I think that's an important thing to vet people on. our Congress, and I know we're talking about a governor's position, but they're just, it's filled with cowards. And I just did an interview with Terry Dietrich from Wisconsin, and as he and I have often talked, the Republican Party lacks courage. You've seen that. Have you not seen that? Courage, courage, courage. It only takes one man with real courage to change the world. Well, I think that certainly Jay Collins has proven that he has courage. He has a great story. And when I heard him talk about all the issues in that debate, I was very impressed with his answers. He knew about everything. He didn't stumble. He had a deep understanding of what those issues were. So I think he's a strong contender for good reason. Paul Renner, again, I think he would have been a good governor, but he's only in single digits, and I think it's just not possible. And it may not be possible for Jay Collins either, given $100 million that Byron has in his war chest. So those are the choices tomorrow for the people of Florida, and I hope this helps you to sort of think through some of it. So the other interesting race taking place in Florida tomorrow, that would be August the 18th of 2026, is in the 25th district down by Miami Beach. And Democratic Socialist Oliver Larkin is challenging incumbent United States Representative Jared Moskowitz in Florida's 25th Democratic primary. Larkin is running on a populist platform that includes Medicare for all, universal child care, and paid leave. Moskowitz, who has significantly outraised Larkin, refuses to debate him due to Larkin's anti-Zionist stance. Larkin has gained national attention and fundraising boosts from confrontational appearances on conservative news programs like Fox. And I could talk about that, but I might not get to it because I don't think it's that important. They've made something out of nothing. But here's I'm not shilling for Jared Moskowitz. He's on the far left, but he's one of the last Democrats in the House who supports Israel, which is pretty sad, isn't it? And, of course, Oliver Larkin is a total anti-Semite. And so this is kind of the crux of it. And, of course, in that part of Florida, you have a lot of Jews, Jewish voters, and you also have a lot of people from Cuba. And I'm going to get into what Oliver really stands for. He's a union organizer, okay? Think about it. Well, maybe you don't know what that means. Maybe you haven't grown up around unions. Union organizers have always been the avenue through which communism has spread in other countries and in the United States as well. It doesn't mean every union member is a communist. I'm not saying that. But boy, oh boy, are they the festering ground for creating a lot of communists. And so that's what he does. He's the one that festers. So he did an interview with CBS Miami, and I want us to listen to it, and I'm going to talk about some of the stance that he's taking here. This is clip three.
I'm Oliver Larkin. I'm a Democratic candidate, and I'm running for the United States House of Representatives in District 25.
So tell me what your four main priorities are.
I want to pass Medicare for All, universal child care, paid family and medical leave, and to build more affordable housing across South Florida.
All right, so that sounds great, doesn't it? And I know so many of our, especially younger people, college grads, but are having trouble getting jobs. They're having trouble paying off their school debt. They're having trouble buying houses. And I understand that. So, but I just have to appeal to you parents and also to them. Many of you are old enough to listen to an adult podcast now. So maybe some of you are even listening to me, or some of you who are not real versed or familiar with communism or the results of the things he's proposing, this might help. Medicare for All sounds great. In fact, let's listen to what Oliver says about it. Clip one.
So with Medicare for All, we have a system of Medicare that, although it's not perfect, it is the best starting point for us to rebuild our healthcare infrastructure after the cuts to the Medicare and Medicaid programs under the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. With expanded and improved Medicare for All, which has currently been introduced in the House and Senate, we can have expanded coverage for vision, hearing, dental, mental health care, reproductive health care with no premiums, deductibles, co-pays, or out-of-pocket costs. The United States is the wealthiest nation on earth, not not to guarantee health care as a right, and we pay twice as much per capita as other peer nations for our health care with worse outcomes. So if we pass Medicare for All, we can really lower the cost of health care and make it accessible for all people without having to worry about whether they can afford to receive the care they need.
Oh, he's good. He's good. And in fact, all these socialist candidates are, they're trained. They have special training. They go to Marxist, Leninist, Socialist. They have very sophisticated training. And you'll notice they all have the same kind of qualities. They smile and they're very pleasant. They sound very normal, even as they're saying ridiculous things. And Oliver's got it down. He's very good. So Medicare for All, what about that? Well, remember that Medicare is something that's granted to seniors starting at 65. And that's because they've worked through the years and they have, through their work, paid into Medicare and Social Security. And you can argue about how generous it is or not. I don't want to get into that. But that's why they get it, because they've been paying into it for all these years. I'm one of those, actually. And I don't even use Medicare. But that's a whole different story. But Medicare is very generous. It gives good benefits and people can get, you know, just valuable medicine and all of that. So his idea, Oliver's big idea, is that everybody now should have that. Everybody should. And we should expand it to what? Dental care and vision care and also abortion. He said, you know, women's rights or whatever he termed it. But he was talking about abortion. Everybody. We're a rich company. We're a rich country, and we should be able to provide this for every citizen. Well, ladies and gentlemen, do I need to explain that that would bankrupt the entire country to pay for every single citizen all of those things that Medicare pays? And besides which, it would take away the benefits from seniors who've worked so hard, because their benefits would, they would get less, they would just get less care. I want to kind of point to Obamacare. That's, some of you don't even remember that. But Obamacare was like universal health care. Everybody's going to get good health care. We're going to help you do that. And they laid in wait a plan that didn't cost very much. And everybody, they had these special signups and these special names for people that signed you up. And millions of Americans signed up. And then what they didn't know, but those of us that followed it, we knew exactly that about this time, 2026, 2025, suddenly, the rules changed, and Obamacare would cost, some people are paying $3,000 a month for a huge deductible, and they can't find doctors because nobody wants to take Obamacare, and they're paying tons of money. Most of them are having to really pay for their own health care, or they're not seeing a doctor. So that's just exactly what Oliver Larkin has in mind. Don't be fooled. Don't be fooled. For those of you that are younger, find a job that has a health care plan. That's probably a really good way of doing it. And once you get a really good job, and don't think that you can't. I think there are some jobs that are going to be coming that have not been there before. It might not be in your area. I'm not talking about geographical. I'm talking about expertise. But there may be some really good jobs, and you might want to buy your own health care. You might get better care doing that. But it is possible to make it work in this. But the alternative is a socialistic system where the government pays for everything. And he's not done. Okay, so Oliver Larkin is not done. This is the next one, number two.
With universal child care, again, the United States is one of the only wealthy nations in the world not to have universal child care. I see this as essential to not only care for our children, but also to support people going into the workforce. When moms have to stay at home or dads have to stay at home to care for a child, because the cost of child care is tens of thousands of dollars a year in some cases, that hurts everyone in the economy. And if we have universal child care that is paid for, where people can reliably go to work and have their children receive quality child care at an affordable rate, that is going to help everyone in the economy.
Well, maybe. Okay, so if I, that would sound really good. It always sounds good. It sounds good. Doesn't that sound good that you could, women, I'll talk to you for a second. I know how hard it is to work and be a mom. I've done that for years, and not when my kids were really small. So I thank God for that. But when they are small and you still need to work, you've got a really important job or whatever, you're maybe the major breadwinner in your house. This just sounds so good. And for those of you who are not so, you don't get such good income. You're waiting tables, or it sounds so tempting. It sounds so tempting. But please hear me. there's something behind this that he's not saying. And I think the best way for me to illustrate that is, this is socialism, right? Does anybody have an idea what the Soviet Union's moniker is? It's the Union of Soviet Socialist Republic. The Union of Soviet Socialist Republic. Communism is socialism, is communism. It is. It is, just because you don't think it is. It is, trust me. The communists realize that, and they're very free with that. I think it's North Korea who has the socialist title in their name, too. I should know, but I don't remember the exact title of it. But so here's the thing. What the Soviet Union did in regard to children and health and daycare was really simple. They mandated that all women had to work. And they didn't care what that work was. It could be manual labor. It could be whatever they tell them they're going to do, because they didn't have a choice. So all the women went to work, but hey, don't worry, because we've got daycare. So all of these daycare centers sprung out in the Soviet Union, and all of these women that the moms didn't know raised their children, and they raised them for years. And guess what happened in that daycare? The Soviet Union won those kids over. Government was God. Mom didn't really have an important role in their lives. They were propagandized. And you think, oh, that couldn't happen here. Are you kidding me? That can't happen here. But I'll tell you what, when I was in Chicago on the radio, I became aware that already, I can't remember the acronym, but it's the Association of Preschools. It's some association that handles their curriculum. They were already creating curriculum for 3- and 4-year-olds about homosexuality, about sexuality, and not transgenderism then. But I'm sure they're doing that now. And that's what the preschools were using, because that's who accredits them. So you think that can happen here? Do you know what your preschoolers are being taught right now? Were you? I don't know. Maybe you're in a Christian daycare, which, thank God for that. But I'm just telling you, it's about government control and propagandizing your children. And yes, it may help you moms, but it won't help you in the long run. Plus, one other thing, the Soviet Union, the socialists of the Soviet Union, wanted to break down the family. They didn't want family units. And they wanted the government to be the one that owned and ran everything. And that's, you know, some of these candidates are actually saying that out loud, like Mondami in New York City is talking about, you know, taking over private property. So that means, you know, like your house, you know, your car, the things you have, they wouldn't be yours. Your phone. I mean, you wouldn't own anything. The government would own it, and you might be able to use it. And depends on how you are, how you feel about things. So that's a universal child care. Then we're not finished. Let's go with number three.
With paid family and medical leave, the United States, again, is out of step with the majority of the industrialized world. And you shouldn't have to worry about going to work when you're sick because you can't afford to miss a paycheck. When you have the birth of a new child or the death of a loved one, you should be able to take leave and spend time with your family. I think that is the moral and right thing to do. And I think that also contributes to people's satisfaction in their workplace. If they have those essential needs met and are cared for, then I think that is going to benefit all of us in America. So I would like to see paid family and medical leave.
He's so compassionate. You know, it's very, very fetching. But I'll tell you, here's the problem. So stay with me. I know a lot of you are younger and you have a different view of things than a lot of us that have lived longer. I would say that you would have been laughed out of the room if you had suggested that your company or your place of business should pay you while you take off for some kind of, like, especially childbirth. Obviously, if you get sick, there were provisions made back then. Probably it was an uneven thing, so I can't claim that everyone was taken care of. I can't, and that is a problem. But, like, women chose to go to work, and I chose to go to work. Did anybody hold a gun to your head and tell you you had to go to work? I know some of you feel like you must, but often that's not the case. Now, single moms, like, I see a lot of waitresses, and I love talking to them. And I'm so, they make me just so sad because they're so overburdened. A lot of them are single moms, and so they do have to go to work. And so this is maybe the issue where I might have a lot more sympathy. But I'm seeing here now that husbands are taking off medical leave when their babies are born. I don't understand that. Women, you are capable of taking care of those newborn babies. I mean, I had my hands full. I shouldn't compare myself to this, but really, does your husband have to be there next to you? Can't you take care of that baby? I know it's hard, but you can. The answer is yes, you can. Yes, you can. It shouldn't be your husband, who now his employer is having to spend money to let him stay home with you so you can have some help with that baby. Well, that's nice. That's what mothers are for, mother-in-laws, sisters, neighbors. But husbands, really, and here's the thing. We're asking then these companies to pay more money in general. Who's going to do that work while you're on this 6-week leave or whatever it is, or 8 months, sometimes 3 months? Who's going to do your work? Somebody has to do your work, and that means your company has to pay for that. And you say, well, they're rich, or that's a big company, they can afford it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that company, however magnanimous, will pass that cost on to consumers. They will. And so if you wonder why prices are high, it might be because a lot of us are just pulling our weight in this economy. I mean, all of us. I'm not talking about new moms. But we need to work a little bit harder and not be so free with letting someone else pay the freight for us. And so it's the costs are passed on to you, and it's not really fair to the employer to make them do that. So there's that. And then the last one is number four. Let's listen.
We have in South Florida a majority of people, according to a Florida Atlantic University poll that came out last year, that are considering leaving our state due to the cost of living crisis. We've seen in Miami-Dade County a net population decrease in the recent years because of the cost of living. The Miami metropolitan area just surpassed New York City metro as being more expensive despite us having a lower median household income. So there is a affordable housing crunch right now. I believe that with legislation like the Homes for All Act that would abolish the Faircloth Amendment passed in the 1990s that capped the number of social housing units available to be owned at the number that existed in 1999, as well as taking on corporate landlords and private equity, we can build millions of new affordable housing units all across the United States, including here in South Florida, where it's desperately needed, so that our labor force can afford to live where they work, and that families aren't pushed out of where they raise their children.
Again, it sounds so compassionate. I think if you just tuned in, that's Oliver Larkin, who's running in the Florida's 25th district. He's a full-blown socialist, but he sounds so reasonable, doesn't he? And, of course, on that, he sounds reasonable because it is hard to find an affordable house right now, in Florida anyway, and I'm sure in many areas of the country it's really hard. And if you don't have a good job and you don't have enough income, it's really hard. But you know what? There are other solutions to this besides letting the government provide housing for people. It is the same principle. You know about public housing. For years, we thought about it as being from Chicago, Cabrini Green, huge high rises for poor black families. And they became, crucibles for crime and all kinds of terrible stuff, so much so that sometimes the police couldn't even go in them. Now, I'm not saying this would happen everywhere, but I'm saying it's good for people to pay for their own needs. It's better for you to have an obligation, and it's better for society. So we just have government housing everywhere, on every block, beside you in your neighborhood. So that people can have their rent subsidized, because that is what this is about. I think that what we need, personally, I don't think we need to go backwards or downward. I think we need to move in a different direction where people, we've got to provide jobs. The economy is really good right now, and there are jobs. You might have to move to a different area of the country to get a job. You might not be able to stay near your mother or your grandmother. You might have to move. You might have to make sacrifices to get that job. Now, I know some of you are trying really hard to get a job, so I do not want to minimize that. But I'm just telling you, if you really examine your heart, maybe some of you could be a little more flexible and pay a little bit more of a price to get a job and to be able to support your family. And so you just look for jobs. Look for jobs. And, you know, they're all over the place. There's lots of jobs in Texas right now. I think there's probably a lot of jobs in Florida. And just try to find a good job. Let's do it that way. Instead of having the government in your poverty come in and help you with your housing, how are you ever going to get out of the poverty level or raise your level of life if you just have the government pay for all of this so that you can, what, sit around and play video games and watch movies? I mean, that's not good for you. That's not good for society. It's not good for all of us. America was a country that was built on individual ingenuity, hard work. We have accomplished so much. I've just been reading the biographies of Daniel Boone and also Davy Crockett. Interesting, very interesting, the autobiography. I do not suggest you read biographies that other people have written in the last few years because you can't trust them. But you talk about hard work and risk, you know, having to go out every day and find their food. I was reading Davy Crockett, actually. And now, this sounds an extreme. Yes, you can't do this now. You're not equipped. But when they were settling the country, they would go out. I remember Davy Crockett tells the story about how he killed 10 bears in one day. Now, that's not a waste because he had a family at home that didn't have any meat. And so he went out. He fell through the ice. You should read what he had to hack his way with a hatchet through the ice to get to the other side and all the things that he went through to get the bears back home to feed family and friends. Do you have to do that? Or do you call DoorDash? I mean, we have it so easy. And I really think it's time to sort of buck up, buttercup, and all of us need to work harder. Even if you're like in a job right now, if I have done this where I've settled into a certain level of effort, and I don't stay there long because I think, no, double down. It's time to do this now. No, you got to do more. You don't do less, you do more. And I would just challenge, and I think that's, speaking of being a believer in Christ, I think that's what God would expect of us is excellence and hard work, not such laziness, not never getting up, never walking, never going anywhere, never doing anything, just indulging ourselves. And that's the extreme. Again, I'm not talking about those of you who are desperate to find work. Some of you, I'm sure, don't fall in this category, but too many people do. So let's get up off the couch and let's find a job and then stop looking to government to help us. So those were the ideas of Oliver Larkin, who's running in the 25th district of Florida. Okay, so that election is tomorrow. That's August the 18th. And so I hope I've helped a little bit for you to figure out. And now you know how to look for your own races. Get your sample ballot. You could probably get it from the local, whatever party you're in. Get the sample ballot from that office. Just call them or look in the paper. There's a lot of places to find them. And go through every candidate, and you can find out a lot online. Ask who supports them, where they get their money, who's endorsed them, what kind of legislation they voted on, or read how they feel on the issues. Those are just some clues about what you can do in order to vote with wisdom and knowledge. All right, so I think that's all for today. And remember that Preborn is our wonderful sponsor, and they help save babies' lives. And I think they've done that 80,000 babies this year. You should be very proud because you are the ones that have actually sent that money to make that happen. And if you'd like to continue to do that, let's go for it. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. $28 will provide one ultrasound for a confused mom. So let's do it. All right, well, thank you so much for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.